Welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am Chip Patterson, your host. Today's show is a good one. Gary Danielson joining once again. We have a lot of fun. I don't know if you've heard, there's a big, big game in Athens, Georgia coming up this weekend as Alabama comes to town to play the Georgia Bulldogs. We get all into that game, all the different angles, whether it's Brian Schottenheimer going up against Kirby Smart or Lane Kiffin going up against Jeremy Pruitt. Now, we get into all the different angles of Georgia-Alabama. Quick review of Tennessee-Florida and some other SEC East thoughts and more with Gary Danielson. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn so that you can get the SEC on CBS podcast first. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports and joined by the SEC on CBS lead college football analyst Gary Danielson. Gary, thank you so much once again for your time. It is a big, big week. You had yet another thrilling game the week before. We've got just a test that you and I have been talking about here for a couple weeks between Georgia and Alabama on Saturday in Athens as the SEC on CBS game of the week. When you get to this point in the season, Gary, for you, just do you feel the SEC conference play picking up as you're talking to these coaches, you're talking to these players, sure. do they feel it right now?
Yes, they kind of relish the matchups in the league. Whatever conference you're in, you can talk about the cross country rivalries, and those are all intense, and they're great football games. And of course, nowadays, to play for the national championship and in this conference, they're 6, 7, 8 schools that every year measure the success of their season on whether they compete for a national championship. So you're talking about a lot of players that, relish the opportunity to play in the conference. Yeah, the non-conference games are good.
Right.
But these close rivalries are why they came to these schools. They know who they're playing against. There's great history in all the games. And lately, there's been such huge consequences. So, yeah, you can definitely feel the intensity picking up.
Looking back at this past week's game between Florida and Tennessee, hearing Jim McElwain speak and seeing what I was able to observe on the field, it seems like a incomplete and an imperfect Gators team at this point in the building of a new program, in the building of what Jim McElwain wants this to be. What did you see from the Gators, and where are they right now under Jim McElwain?
Sure. Well, one of the things that, Will Muschamp said when he left is, don't let the next guy tell you there's no talent there. And a lot of that is true. This Florida defensive unit as a whole is as talented as the contenders that people are talking about for winning a national championship. I mean, when you throw out the names, Ohio State and Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, and just to name a few in this area right here, this Florida defense could compete with any of those in depth and in elite talent. Obviously the same problems that, plagued Will Muschamp in Florida are still evident on their offense. That's just a work in progress. It's for whatever reason they've missed on recruits, and it's not the championship level, so they're having to figure out ways to win. The Florida-Tennessee game was a unique game because of all the circumstances involved in it. A 10-year losing streak by one team, a Florida team that really isn't sure on quarterback, and then they lose one of the two that they've been playing, and all that kind of fell together and cascaded around, some late-game strategy and plays that made it one of those games that'll be memorable in Florida-Tennessee history.
And you had you observed great. Powell was really good down the stretch for them. Callaway obviously coming up with the big play. Callaway being a freshman. Jake McGee, what a great tool for Will Greer to have. I called it on a radio appearance earlier in the week. I called it a MASH unit. How would you describe this Florida offense? It seems like they've been put together with so many different pieces, but to see them come together in the second half, I think that was an encouraging sign moving forward.
Well, I think one of the strengths of Jim McElwain is being able to fit a lot of parts that, really nothing really grabs you with. I said in the broadcast a few times that there's really no go-to player on Florida. And they really don't. They have a lot of nice football players. Callaway seems to be emerging eventually that he could be that type of difference maker. But that creates their own problems for defenses to try to figure out where the ball's going to, because I don't think Florida knows where they want the ball to go to in certain situations. Now, they were managed very well. And the irony here is a little bit that because the Florida Brain Trust did not have two quarterbacks to flip and flop around with, they stuck with Will Grier, and ultimately that who knows if they would have had two quarterbacks, would they have tried the other guy with the way Will was kind of struggling and the offense was struggling to kind of chase that proverbial spark that coaches often try to do. And what happened here is because Will was the only guy, he got finally calm. And when the rest of the game got a little bit hectic, he seemed to settle down and make the plays under duress that proved to be, exactly what McElwain needed. But I thought it was great the way both he and Doug Nussmeier used all of the, I think to their peak, the abilities of all of their specialists. And they also hid, different offensive linemen and matchups and chip locked. I thought it was a brilliant game plan, but it still had to go right down to 5 fourth downs and 1 improbable 4th and 14 for it to work out that way.
Right, exactly. It is a 4-0 Gators team, and folks in Gainesville are very excited to have a 4-0 Gators team, but there are absolutely weaknesses, and some that may, be brought to light as Ole Miss comes to Gainesville on Saturday.
Everybody's got them. Nobody's got a perfect team this year. Ole Miss comes with a quarterback that isn't used to this league on the road. It's going to, Chad Kelly is going to face the defense that can run with that offense. This Florida defense can run and force some mistakes. They still don't run the ball well from the tailback position, does Ole Miss. So if Florida can hold on to the ball, we'll see if that Ole Miss offense can generate enough, because I still think this is going to be a really good football game.
You mentioned it before, John Bullard, Antonio Morrison, of course Vernon Hargraves. These are guys that would start at any other defense, including Ole Miss at this point.
Well,
right now.
And McAllister, Harris, they got two linebackers, they just have a really good football team. And there's a lot of talent, and they're deep. They play about 8 defensive linemen and 3 linebackers and about 6 defensive backs. So they can play with anybody. Canoe Neal, their safety, is a Cam Chancellor-type hitter coming out of the secondary. He's 6'1", 220 pounds, and runs all over the field. So they have an elite defense.
Yeah, really, really fun group to watch. Like you said, incredible speed. Should be a really, really good matchup against Ole Miss. On the flip side of the result in Gainesville, there is Butch Jones, and there are the questions and the Tennessee fans that are so frustrated. They've given so much to this program, so much hope and excitement, and 2 very disappointing losses. Where do the Vols bounce back now? How do they pick themselves up off the mat, move forward, and try to correct some of these mistakes? Because in many ways, and I hate for the listeners that we're repeating some of the same stories, but the things that we talked about after the Oklahoma game, the things that you mentioned about just not trying not to lose, I couldn't help but have those words ringing in my ear again, as it seemed to happen again against Florida.
Yeah, and this one, listen, for the obvious criticisms that Butch got for his decision-making about the 2-point play, I actually didn't concur that much with that. He got hit for a lot of criticism that I thought was a bit unjust. However, I do think he is, in line for some criticism for his play calling at the end of the game, in that fourth quarter specifically, when he got the ball back. He should have known better. He already had done that against the Tennessee-Oklahoma game a couple weeks prior, and he really went conservative again, in my mind. I thought the Tennessee defense and for the all but for the last play, basically. And I thought the Tennessee offense had a good day. I just thought they got a little tight this time from the coaching staff. I really felt there was a critical conservative call by the defensive coordinator on the last play, and I thought they kind of let the air out of the offense on a drive that they clearly needed to put a few first downs together, and they got way too conservative. So I'm actually putting a little bit more on the coaching staff than the players in this particular game.
Well, you mentioned it early. We all talked about it. Making Josh Dobbs a feature player was was a big part of it early, even on that little bit of trickeration drawn up by Coach DeBoard right there. The Dobbs is a player. Dobbs is absolutely a game-changing type player. Where else can, is it on the sidelines where this Tennessee team can really improve moving forward?
No, I actually think that he Josh is a real difference maker as a running threat right now, but he's not as a passing threat. The Tennessee wide receivers, I think, only caught three balls in this football game, and they weren't even targeted that much, and they've got a good group of players. I think to win a championship in this league, it's hard to hide your quarterback. And now, you know, that's kind of hard to say when Dobbs had such a fantastic game running the ball and doing all the things he did. But I still think it has to be the entire package. And, you know, my one fear for Tennessee at the beginning of the year was that Dobbs would become so important as an integral part of the running game that he would take punishment as the season wore on, number one, but it would leave their passing game lacking. And I think the next step for Tennessee is they need to open it up more. I really do. I think they need to attack with their wide receivers, and they need to try to go into these football games not trying to get out of there with a win, but by trying to dominate throughout. And that's hard to do. When you got a lead in the fourth quarter on the road, coaches like to tuck it away, but I don't think this Tennessee team is capable of tucking it away. It makes them nervous. It makes the coaches nervous. I think they need to keep the foot on the gas the whole way, and Josh's next step has to be improving his passing. He's late with throws. He's not accurate enough with throws. There's a disconnect between what I believe elite receivers should be doing in the SEC. I mean, it's okay to be a 500 or slightly better 500 team, but Tennessee's talking about getting to Atlanta, and they're not far enough along in their passing game to get to Atlanta.
Another team that maybe thought could be in the mix, even in a very challenging SEC West, was Arkansas. Arkansas visits Neyland Stadium. It's a game that two teams, both of these groups of players, both of these coaching staffs, they're going to need this one bad. How do you see this game playing out in terms of the matchup?
I very carefully watched how Arkansas played the game against Texas A&M, and you know they're looking at the same end of game problems that Tennessee is having. You know, for the most part, they're still playing Bielma style football. There's still a lot of physicality on the field. They just can't seem to figure out how to close these things out, and you know, they all seem to be self-inflicted. It's not just style points here. I mean, I know the Toledo game, I was a little concerned with their run-play balance in that game. They just seemed to get out of whack. But in this game, it was, you know, inopportune penalties and turnovers, and it's just it's unlike a Bielma team because, you know, he prides himself in having his team play sharp, mentally tough football, physical football. And so far they've gotten three out of the four, but they haven't been mentally sharp enough to win from all the teams that I remember following Bielma in his days, at all the way back to Kansas State as a defensive coordinator, all the way through Wisconsin. So they're going to show up. We always talk about the big games, how intense and how much pressure there are, but there's going to be as much pressure. You kind of laid this one out exactly right. There's going to be as much pressure on this field as there is in any big game between any two top 10 teams, because they know their fan bases and their seasons are resting on this football game. Arkansas can get back into a season, and if Tennessee loses this one at home, that's going to be tough.
Do you have any thought about what might tilt this particular game? Because I agree, we're about to spend a decent amount of time breaking down Georgia and Alabama for its relevance in the SEC right. and national title race. But in terms of what it means to each program, do you have any idea of what might tilt this one way or the other?
Well, I think it's going to be both teams. I think they'll both run the ball about as expected. So whichever team throws the ball better, because that's their left hand.
Right.
Both teams, their left hand is their passing game. You know, Brandon Allen is capable of it, and Joshua Dobbs, I think, has to be challenged to do it. I think they're relying too much on trying to manufacture throws for him. If I could sit on a blackboard with Mike DeBoard, I know him well, and Butch Jones, I'd say, how about just calling a pass and letting the quarterback read it and throw it to a guy instead of trying to engineer four guys picking for one guy to get him open for an easy throw. I think too much engineering of passing game. I think they need to open it up and go for it.
Another game with two teams that are looking for just a little bit of hope. I think that in terms of preseason expectation, it's not nearly the pressure that we're going to see in Arkansas, Tennessee, but South Carolina going to play Missouri, two teams that are just seeming to stumble here out of the gates. What's Lorenzo Nunez named the starter? He comes out, just doesn't seem, in my eyes, Gary, to have it really as a passer yet, but a very dynamic rushing threat, and at least he gives the Gamecocks that. What do you see in South Carolina, Missouri, in terms of two teams that are hoping to be able to salvage what they can from this season?
Yeah, well, first of all, for South Carolina, I see some of the same problems that Steve Spurrier has with the breakdown with Nunez, in that that Gus Malzahn had in a kind of a, you know, flipped way with Jeremy Johnson. Gus likes to call a game from a running quarterback standpoint and build from there into a play action game. Steve likes to start with a pocket passing quarterback to be at the controls of his intricate passing game and then hand it off to the running game when things get under control. Both these coaches are kind of coaching against the grain. It's going to be, I think, very difficult for Steve to grab a game plan and manage a running quarterback who throws a little bit when his 30-year career, he had the exact opposite of that. So I think it's going to be a tough task for Steve. Missouri, you know, the way Matty Mock is playing right now, the rumblings are looking that, you know, he better be on his game because the young quarterback locked behind him is a good prospect, and he's just not producing the offense the way Missouri is used to it. I mean, you know, this Missouri team has had a lot of experience in gaining a lot of yards and scoring a lot of points, and if you can't produce them, people start to look at the next quarterback. Believe me, I've been there.
right, exactly. All right, we turn our attention to Sanford Stadium, Between the Hedges, Athens, Georgia, where Gary Danielson and Vern Lundquist will be in the booth. Allie LaForce on the sideline for the SEC on CBS Game of the Week. It is one that we circled because we don't get this matchup a lot. You know, right. The SEC rotation gives us some of these unfamiliar rivalries, and it is particularly big this year, not only because Alabama is a SEC West hopeful, Georgia SEC East frontrunner at this point, but because of what happened the last time Alabama played an SEC game, losing to Ole Miss. So many talented players, so many great coaches in this matchup. Gary, what stands out to you right now that you're really excited about as you're breaking down the tape and getting ready for Saturday?
Well, these two teams are a little bit different. There's a lot of similarities. Nick Saban spoke about it. You know, they do play by design of their program. They both kind of play the same type of attack. But to me, it seems in a broad brush that Georgia this year knows exactly who they are and what they want to be and how they need to attack. The offense is built around a tailback. Their offense is built around a play-action pass game. Their offense is built about control the ball, move the chains. And Mark Richt and Mike Bobo before Brian Schottenheimer have been very successful. And it's not just 3 yards in a cloud of dust. They produce chunk plays with this offense. it appears to me that Georgia knows exactly who they are and how they want to play this game. On the other hand, I don't know if Alabama is exactly sure of what they want to be. We still hear talk about they want to be play teams and have them remember the physicality of the game, yet they start off games with, you know, play action passes and trips and five wide receivers, and they seem to be a bit searching yet for exactly what is this version, 2015, the best football team for them to be. Now, they've settled in on Coker, and this will be a tough challenge for him. The defense that he faces is just as good in, on the front seven as the one he practices against Alabama, and everybody knows that Alabama's got an elite defense. So that's going to be a challenge for Jake going on the road and facing this Georgia defense, because they've got three outside players that can rush the edges at any time, that is good as anybody in the country and maybe superior to any team on one. Jordan Jenkins, Leonard Floyd, and Reggie Carter, three players, and I don't know exactly how Carter's going to be health-wise for this game, but if those three players can be impacts, and we saw Georgia without Carter in that one game, they got plenty of fill-ins, but even Jenkins and Floyd together are a handful for anybody.
Yeah, really, really, really impressive. You, like you've said before, Georgia's had the championship level defense all season. You know, we've seen that. Grayson Lambert at times has not been an SEC championship caliber quarterback, including when you were there to see Vanderbilt starting 0-7 in that game. He bounced back, but he bounced back against not a great passing defense.
Right.
And this is going to be an interesting spot, because I think that with Alabama's strength defensively being stopping the run, there's going to be a moment where Grayson Lambert is going to have to make some throws. Do you see Grayson Lambert that he's going to be able to step up and do this?
Well, we'll see.
I
mean, there's one thing that I know, you know, Nick Saban loves about coaching defense. His whole philosophy has been built upon the Belichick tree, that a defense to be successful must affect the quarterback, is the phrase he uses. Affect means by designing, disguising your defense, number one, so he doesn't have confidence at the snap exactly what you're doing. Multiple looks, matching up defensive personnel with offensive personnel. Strength in the middle of the line that forces two-gap runs, meaning you free up linebackers because you have big block-eating defensive tackles and ends up front that don't allow those offensive linemen to get to the next level. So in this game, you know, Saban's got the team he wants to go against, and he knows exactly where Grayson's going to be on this play. It's not like he's going to have to chase him. He's not going to play in the quarterback draw. Basically, the Saban defense is going to face an NFL-style offense. And that's clear. One of the areas that I kind of wanted to talk about is that the similarities, let's talk about them now.
Okay.
We have two ex-NFL guys running each offense, in Lane Kiffin and Brian Schottenheimer. You got the guys that have, you know, in the NFL faced these type of intricate defenses and understand how to break them down, how to attack them, and how to cover up for weaknesses on their own offense. Nothing Saban or Georgia does is going to bother them at all. I mean, I know Jeremy Pruitt is a Saban disciple, but nothing they do will surprise Lane Kiffin, and nothing Kirby Smart or Nick Saban does isn't something that Brian Schottenheimer hasn't seen. So that's going to be a real interesting matchup, and both of them have elite tailbacks to be able to pound that ball. I see it as being a real NFL-style game where they pound, they want to keep third down manageable, because I don't think they really believe that they can handle the nickel packages for each team. I think both teams are fearful of that. And like in the NFL, you know, a third and three is a passing down. That's what I think it'll be in this game.
So if it's going to be closer to an NFL game, that looks good for this not being a 5.5-hour sweat fest.
Well, the clock in college ball still has its own lifestyle, I'll tell you that. I've been arguing about this and nobody hears for 10 years that there's no sense that college teams play almost 15 to 20% more plays than pro teams. They need to cut it down. These kids are now playing 13 and 14 games, and you can't go find players on waivers like you can in the NFL. Remember, you're redshirting players. You've got some players that you just totally missed on that really can't play. So towards the end of the season, these players get wore down with a lot of plays, and I think we've got too many in college ball, and the games are about 20 minutes too long. I think they could cut it out very easily, but no one's doing it yet. If you know anybody I can talk to, I'd be happy to give them a call.
I think you can get people to pick up faster than I can, Gary. Well, what about the first down? I've heard that be suggested. If you, instead of stopping the clock after first down,
sure, that would be everybody's idea, I think. And I also don't think that they should change it. I think it should be exactly, if I was in charge of everything, the college rules and the NFL rules would be exactly the same except for one thing. I like for college the 1 foot down on a catch. 1 foot, you don't have to have both feet. I think that's a legitimate call. There's too many of these rules that there's 30 to 40 different rules that contrast between the two, and more of the rules tilt towards the offense in college. And I think that, nobody wants to see 3-2. But I don't really enjoy watching 53-48 either. A happy medium of an NFL game, of a good football game being 31-27, like we just had between Florida and Tennessee, means that every decision both sides makes is critical, every decision. And I think, just stopping the clock, not stopping the clock after first down, would make those timeouts more valuable at the end of the game and make it much more a strategic game.
He is Gary Danielson. He will be in Athens, Georgia for Alabama at Georgia and Sanford Stadium with Vern Lundquist and Allie LaForce. And if the game plays out as we've predicted, he will get out of there in enough time to make a decent dinner reservation.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate your time.
All right, Chip.
My thanks once again to Gary Danielson for his time. Be sure that you are subscribed because we have a great finish to the week for you. Robbie Calland, Tom Fornelli, Jerry Hinnan, and a very special guest, one that you will probably recognize before the end of the week. So be sure to tune in for it all, and we appreciate you listening. It means a lot. Be sure to let me know at Chip_Patterson if you have any feedback, questions. We'll be sure to try to answer them here on the next show. For Gary Danielson, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening to the SEC on CBS Podcast.